Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Early this morning, word from the White House, President Obama to announce Judge Sonia Sotomayor as his pick to replace Justice David Souter on the United States Supreme Court. In this hour, we will hear the president's formal announcement and look at the judge, her judicial temperament, her record. She is 54, Hispanic, and Obama's first pick for the high court. This hour, On Point, President Obama nominates Judge Sonia Sotomayor to the Supreme Court. You can join the conversation. What do you see in this nominee for the court, for the country? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll hear later in this hour from Notre Dame legal scholar Richard Garnett, and Slate's Dahlia Lithwick will join us as well. But first, joining me from Washington, D.C., is David Savage, Supreme Court correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. David, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
So lots of speculation now for weeks since Justice Souter says he wants to retire and get back to New Hampshire. Out of all of those who were mentioned, here comes Sonia Sotomayor. Your first take on the meaning of this choice as Obama's nominee.
Well, it's a historic choice and in some ways a conventional choice. Historic because for more than 20 years, presidents going back to George H.W. Bush have been trying to find the first or appoint the first Hispanic justice. This is something that, you know, will be remembered a long time. Will be part of Obama's legacy to finally find and appoint a Hispanic to the Supreme Court. Conventional in the sense that all the presidents for the last 20 years have looked to the federal appeals courts and chosen well-established, well-regarded federal appeals court judges. And Sonia Sotomayor is very much in that category. She was a district judge in New York and has been on the Second Circuit Court of the Appeals for about 10 years.
And tell us about her background. And I guess it's important in her case to start fairly young, David.
Yes, I think her background is very important here. She grew up in a Bronx housing project. Her parents came to New York from Puerto Rico. Her father died when she was young.
He was a manual laborer. These were not plush circumstances.
Yes, I think that's what very much would appeal to Barack Obama. This is a young woman who didn't grow up with all the advantages. She came up the hard way, was an excellent student, went to Princeton, went to the Yale Law School, so she has all the academic abilities, but she came up, did not have it easy. And so I think she's given us several speeches that says her background as a Latina and as having grown up in, not the greatest of circumstances in New York affects who she is, and it affects her as a judge.
Her mother, after her father's death, worked 6 days a week as a nurse to send she and her brother to Catholic school. She was summa cum laude at Princeton, not bad, and prominent at Yale Law School as well. It was President George Herbert Walker Bush, the first President Bush, who first nominated her to the federal district court. What about her politics then and since then?
I think she's considered by most people sort of a liberal Democrat. In New York and in some states, there was sort of an understanding that the senior senators would play a role in picking district judges. So my understanding is that of that history is that Daniel Patrick Moynihan played a big role in her getting the job as a district judge under President Bush.
She was elevated to the appeals court in New York by President Bill Clinton in 1997. But by that time, she had already made her first sort of claim to fame was in the big 1990s baseball strike, David.
Yes, I don't know that story very well, but she handed down a ruling that allowed the baseball, lifted an injunction or something, allowed the baseball season to proceed. So baseball fans of that era probably would remember at least what she did.
1995, and she was the one who ended that long baseball strike that year, ruling pretty briskly against the owners in favor of players. She said then that the owners were trying to subvert the labor system, and the strike had, quoting her, placed the entire concept of collective bargaining on trial. You called her her politics liberal. Let's listen for just a moment, thinking of how her nomination may fare before the Senate. To Senator John Kyle of Arizona. Here he is on Fox News Sunday. This is the ranking Republican on the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee, and he was asked there by host Chris Wallace about his position on potential Obama nominee.
Senator Kyle, back in January, in a speech before a lawyers group, the Federalist Society in Phoenix, you said that if the president's choice is too liberal, you reserve the right to filibuster that choice. Do you stand by that, sir?
I went on to say a lot of things about what I meant by that, and I was distinguishing between a person who is just liberal, and undoubtedly this nominee will be liberal, and one who decides cases not based upon the law or the merits, but rather upon his or her emotions or feelings or preconceived ideas. That would be a circumstance in which I could not support the nominee. Now, be clear, Republicans don't have the votes to filibuster a nominee, and that's probably not going to happen in this case either. But we will distinguish between a liberal judge on one side and one who doesn't decide cases on the merits, but rather on the basis of his or her preconceived ideas.
Republican Senator John Kyle of Arizona over the weekend talking about what pick might come down the court. I want to get your response to that, David. We have listeners, callers who want to get in on this conversation already with the news coming out, and we will have the president's announcement later in this hour that he will nominate Judge Sonia Sotomayor to the United States Supreme Court. Let's get a call from Needham, Massachusetts, and Miguel. Miguel, you are on the air.
Hi, how you doing, Tom? And thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
As a Puerto Rican, born in Puerto Rico, raised in the South Bronx when it was the South Bronx, I couldn't be prouder. I couldn't be happier. Puerto Ricans are going to celebrate when she's how do you say it? When she's confirmed.
Confirmed and seated on the court. And do you expect that? I mean, sure, anybody is proud and happy to see somebody, you know, out of their corner in such a position. Do you expect it, Miguel, to affect the way she looks at the American Constitution, at our laws, our society? Do you expect it to have an impact in her rulings?
No. As Puerto Ricans, we have been a very inclusive people. We've always tried to come together. It isn't as true when I was a child in Puerto Rico, but it is a cultural thing. The only thing Puerto Ricans really can say they have is a culture, because they're not a nation, they're not a state.
But you may soon have a United States Supreme Court justice. Miguel, thank you very much for calling. David, I'm quoting here from Judge Sonia Sotomayor, who said, I think this was back in a lecture in 2002, she was talking about ethnicity and gender and indicating those could be important factors in the life and work of a judge. I'm quoting her here. She said, I would hope that a wise Latina woman with the richness of her experiences would more often than not reach a better conclusion than a white male who hasn't lived that life. You've covered courts a lot. What do you make of that statement? Is that unusual? Is that sort of in the mainstream, David?
I think we'll hear a lot of discussion of that statement, Tom. She gave that speech at Berkeley. And as you're noting, she said several times that her background would affect her judging. She says, our gender and national origins may and will make a difference in our judging. And I think she meant not only in the, you know, sort of how you perceive a case, but sort of how you come out. So I think it will be talked about a lot. I should say that one of the things that I would think would appeal to her in a way for President Obama, she doesn't have a long record of controversial opinions on the biggest cases. For example, Diane Wood, the judge from Chicago, who was one of the finalists, had written several abortion opinions and had been involved in a partial birth abortion case. I think, you know, had President Obama chosen her, he could have looked forward to a real summer-long battle over abortion. Sonia Sotomayor has got a terrific background in the story, and she does not have a lot of really controversial opinions in her background. So that may be one of, that may have recommended her for this nomination.
Let's hear one bit of more bit of famous tape. This is from Judge Sotomayor, 2005, Duke University Law School. Of course, activist judges have been a rallying cry for those who do not want to see that kind of judge on the Supreme Court. But here she was saying, aware that she was being taped, but saying anyway that, you know, in fact, a lot of policy effectively comes out of the Court of Appeals. You can hear her trip up a bit and try to recover.
All of the legal defense funds out there, they're looking for people with Court of Appeals experience, because it is, Court of Appeals is where policy is made. And I know, this is on tape, and I should never say that, because we don't make law, I know. I know. I'm not promoting it, and I'm not advocating it, I'm, you know.
I'm not promoting, I'm not advocating, but there she had it. And earlier on gender and ethnicity, she went on to say, of course, reason is the ultimate guide. Do you think we'll hear more on this front as well, David, with her nomination?
Yes, I think she'll have several weeks to give a better explanation of what she really meant when she was talking about the Court of Appeals making policy. It is true that the Court of Appeals sort of preside over the whole region, and they set the law for that region. They don't make policy, but she'll have plenty of time to come up with a good explanation for that.
And in a shift from Justice Souter to a Justice Sotomayor, if and when she should be confirmed, does it change the balance generally in the court's political leanings, its judicial outlook, David?
You would think no, that she'd be, Souter is a sort of moderate liberal. Most people would think Sonia Sotomayor would come on the sort of liberal to moderate side. So no, in that sense, but you know, Supreme Court justices stay a long time, and you never know what issues are going to come down the road, and you never know how the justices sort of affect the discussion inside the court. A lot of the justices would say Thurgood Marshall brought a perspective to the court's discussions on anything involving race or the death penalty because he had handled those cases in the South. And I think what we don't know is that Sonia Sotomayor will change the dynamic inside the court and change the discussions.
David Savage, we thank you very much for joining us today. In just a few minutes, we will go to the president's announcement this morning of Judge Sotomayor for the Supreme Court. And, of course, there will be a lot more about it in the weeks ahead. Do you expect a fiery confirmation path here or something else, David?
Don't know, but I would think not. I think it would be very hard for the Republicans at this stage to mount a big attack on the first Hispanic justice.
David Savage, Supreme Court correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. We will come back with the president's announcement this morning on the nomination of Judge Sonia Sotomayor to the United States Supreme Court. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Big news today out of Washington and the White House on the judicial front in this country. President Obama nominating Judge Sonia Sotomayor, 54 years old. She's been for more than a decade on the Second Circuit Court of Appeals based in New York City. She would become, if nominated, the nation's 111th justice. She would replace Justice David Souter, retiring after 19 years on the bench. This is a woman out of a housing project in the Bronx to Puerto Rican parents, a manual laborer father who died when she was just 8 or 9 years old. Her mother raised her and her brother. She was summa cum laude at Princeton University, Yale Law School. She is on the record on a number of interesting fronts that it is certain we will hear more of in the days ahead as her nomination comes before the Senate. Let's go now to the president. This is from the White House, where he has stood this morning with Judge Sonia Sotomayor, making his announcement of her as his first nominee to the Supreme Court. Let's listen now to the president's announcement this morning.
Everybody have a seat. Thank you. Thank you. Well, I'm excited, too. Of the many responsibilities granted to a president by our Constitution, few are more serious or more consequential than selecting a Supreme Court justice. The members of our highest court are granted life tenure, often serving long after the presidents who appointed them. And they are charged with the vital task of applying principles put to paper more than 20 centuries ago to some of the most difficult questions of our time. So I don't take this decision lightly. I've made it only after deep reflection and careful deliberation. While there are many qualities that I admire in judges across the spectrum of judicial philosophy and that I seek in my own nominee, there are a few that stand out that I just want to mention. First and foremost is a rigorous intellect, a mastery of the law, an ability to hone in on the key issues and provide clear answers to complex legal questions. Second is a recognition of the limits of the judicial role, an understanding that a judge's job is to interpret, not make law, to approach decisions without any particular ideology or agenda, but rather a commitment to impartial justice, a respect for precedent, and a determination to faithfully apply the law to the facts at hand. Now, these two qualities are essential, I believe, for anyone who would sit on our nation's highest court. And yet these qualities alone are insufficient. We need something more. For as Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes once said, "The life of the law has not been logic, it has been experience. Experience being tested by obstacles and barriers, by hardship and misfortune. Experience insisting, persisting, and ultimately overcoming those barriers. It is experience that can give a person a common touch and a sense of compassion, an understanding of how the world works and how ordinary people live. And that is why it is a necessary ingredient in the kind of justice we need on the Supreme Court." Now, the process of reviewing and selecting a successor to Justice Souter has been rigorous and comprehensive, not least because of the standard that Justice Souter himself has set with his formidable intellect and fair-mindedness and decency. I've sought the advice of members of Congress on both sides of the aisle, including every member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. My team has reached out to constitutional scholars, advocacy organizations, and bar associations representing an array of interests and opinions. And I want to thank members of my staff and administration who have worked so hard and given so much of their time as part of this effort. After completing this exhaustive process, I have decided to nominate an inspiring woman who I believe will make a great justice, Judge Sonia Sotomayor of the great state of New York. Over a distinguished career that spans three decades, Judge Sotomayor has worked at almost every level of our judicial system, providing her with a depth of experience and a breadth of perspective that will be invaluable as a Supreme Court justice. It's a measure of her qualities and her qualifications that Judge Sotomayor was nominated to the U.S. District Court by a Republican president, George H.W. Bush, and promoted to the Federal Court of Appeals by a Democrat, Bill Clinton. Walking in the door, she would bring more experience on the bench and more varied experience on the bench than anyone currently serving on the United States Supreme Court had when they were appointed. Judge Sotomayor is a distinguished graduate of two of America's leading universities. She's been a big city prosecutor and a corporate litigator. She spent 6 years as a trial judge on the U.S. District Court and would replace Justice Souter as the only justice with experience as a trial judge, a perspective that would enrich the judgments of the court. For the past 11 years, she has been a judge on the Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit of New York, one of the most demanding circuits in the country. There, she has handed down decisions on a range of constitutional and legal questions that are notable for their careful reasoning, earning the respect of colleagues on the bench, the admiration of many lawyers who argue cases in her court, and the adoration of her clerks, who look to her as a mentor. During her tenure on the district court, she presided over roughly 450 cases. One case in particular involved a matter of enormous concern to many Americans, including me, the baseball strike of 1994-95. In a decision that reportedly took her just 15 minutes to announce, a swiftness much appreciated by baseball fans everywhere, she issued an injunction that helped end the strike. Some say that Judge Sotomayor saved baseball. Judge Sotomayor came to the district court from a law firm where she was a partner focused on complex commercial litigation, gaining insight into the workings of a global economy. Before that, she was a prosecutor in the Manhattan DA's office, serving under the legendary Robert Morgenthau, an early mentor of Sonia's who still sings her praises today. There, Sonia learned what crime can do to a family and a community and what it takes to fight it. It's a career that has given her not only a sweeping overview of the American judicial system, but a practical understanding of how the law works in the everyday lives of the American people. But as impressive and meaningful as Judge Sotomayor's sterling credentials in the law is her own extraordinary journey. Born in the South Bronx, she was raised in a housing project not far from Yankee Stadium, making her a lifelong Yankees fan. I hope this will not disqualify her in the eyes of the New Englanders in the Senate. Sonia's parents came to New York from Puerto Rico during Second World War. Her mother is part of the Women's Army Corps. And in fact, her mother's here today, and I'd like us all to acknowledge Sonia's mom. Sonia's mom had been a little choked up. But Sonia's mother began a family tradition of giving back to this country. Sonia's father was a factory worker with a third grade education who didn't speak English. But like Sonia's mother, he had a willingness to work hard, a strong sense of family, and a belief in the American dream. When Sonia was 9, her father passed away, and her mother worked 6 days a week as a nurse to provide for Sonia and her brother, who's also here today, as a doctor, and a terrific success in his own right. But Sonia's mom bought the only set of encyclopedias in the neighborhood, sent her children to a Catholic school called Cardinal Spellman, out of a belief that with a good education here in America, all things are possible. With the support of family, friends, and teachers, Sonia earned scholarships to Princeton, where she graduated at the top of her class, and Yale Law School, where she was an editor of the Yale Law Journal, stepping onto the path that led her here today. Along the way, she's faced down barriers, overcome the odds, and lived out the American dream that brought her parents here so long ago. And even as she has accomplished so much in her life, she has never forgotten where she began, never lost touch with the community that supported her. What Sonia will bring to the court, then, is not only the knowledge and experience acquired over a course of a brilliant legal career, but the wisdom accumulated from an inspiring life's journey. It's my understanding that Judge Sotomayor's interest in the law was sparked as a young girl by reading the Nancy Drew series, and that when she was diagnosed with diabetes at the age of 8, she was informed that people with diabetes can't grow up to be police officers or private investigators like Nancy Drew. In essence, she was told she'd have to scale back her dreams. Well, Sonia, what you've shown in your life is that it doesn't matter where you come from, what you look like, or what challenges life throws your way, no dream is beyond reach in the United States of America. And when Sonia Sotomayor ascends those marble steps to assume her seat on the highest court of the land, America will have taken another important step towards realizing the ideal that is etched above its entrance: equal justice under the law. I hope the Senate acts in a bipartisan fashion, as it has in confirming Judge Sotomayor twice before, and as swiftly as possible, so that she can take her seat on the court in September and participate in deliberations as the court chooses which cases it will hear this coming year. And with that, I'd like all of you to give a warm greeting as I invite Judge Sotomayor to say a few words.
Sonia Sotomayor stepping to the microphones in the East Room of the White House after her introduction by President Obama as nominee to replace Justice Souter on the United States Supreme Court. Vice President Joe Biden and President Obama flank her, the audience standing as she comes full smile to the microphone.
I was just counseled not to be nervous. That's almost impossible. Thank you, Mr. President, for the most humbling honor of my life. You have nominated me to serve on the country's highest court, and I am deeply moved. I could not, in the few minutes I have today, mention the names of the many friends and family who have guided and supported me throughout my life and who have been instrumental in helping me realize my dreams. I see many of those faces in this room. Each of you, whom I love deeply, will know that my heart today is bursting with gratitude for all you have done for me. The President has said to you that I bring my family. In the audience is my brother, Juan Sotomayor. He's a physician in Syracuse, New York. My sister-in-law, Tracy. My niece, Kylie. She looks like me. My twin nephews, Connor and Corey. I stand on the shoulders of countless people. Yet, there is one extraordinary person who is my life aspiration. That person is my mother, Selena Sotomayor. My mother has devoted her life to my brother and me. And as the President mentioned, she worked often two jobs to help support us after Dad died. I have often said that I am all I am because of her, and I am only half the woman she is. Sitting next to her is Omar Lopez, my mom's husband, and a man whom I have grown to adore. I thank you for all that you have given me and continue to give me. I love you. I chose to be a lawyer and ultimately a judge because I find endless challenge in the complexities of the law. I firmly believe in the rule of law as the foundation for all of our basic rights. For as long as I can remember, I have been inspired by the achievement of our founding fathers. They set forth principles that have endured for more than two centuries. Those principles are as meaningful and relevant in each generation as the generation before. It would be a profound privilege for me to play a role in applying those principles to the questions and controversies we face today. Although I grew up in very modest and challenging circumstances, I consider my life to be immeasurably rich. I was raised in a Bronx public housing project, but studied at two of the nation's finest universities. I did work as an assistant district attorney, prosecuting violent crimes that devastate our communities. But then I joined a private law firm and worked with international corporations doing business in the United States. I have had the privilege of serving as a federal district court trial judge, and am now serving as a federal appellate circuit court judge. This wealth of experiences, personal and professional, have helped me appreciate the variety of perspectives that present themselves in every case that I hear. It has helped me to understand, respect, and respond to the concerns and arguments of all litigants who appear before me, as well as to the views of my colleagues on the bench. I strive never to forget the real-world consequences of my decisions on individuals, businesses, and government. It is a daunting feeling to be here. 11 years ago, during my confirmation process for appointment to the Second Circuit, I was given a private tour of the White House. It was an overwhelming experience for a kid from the South Bronx. Yet, never in my wildest childhood imaginings did I ever envision that moment, let alone did I ever dream that I would live this moment. Mr. President, I greatly appreciate the honor you are giving me, and I look forward to working with the Senate in the confirmation process. I hope that as the Senate and American people learn more about me, they will see that I am an ordinary person who has been blessed with extraordinary opportunities and experiences. Today is one of those experiences. Thank you again, sir.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this morning about President Barack Obama's first nomination of a judge to sit on the United States Supreme Court, and that nominee is Judge Sonia Sotomayor. We've heard the president's announcement this morning and a bit from the judge herself as she heads in now to the nomination process. It is a long way from the Bronx Housing Project, where she grew up. When she went to Princeton, she once said she felt like a visitor landing in an alien country in those Ivy League climes. Now she is nominated for the highest court in the land. To look at Judge Sotomayor, we are joined from South Bend, Indiana, by Richard Garnett, professor of law at the University of Notre Dame. He contributes to the Bench Memos blog at the National Review Online, clerked for Justice William Rehnquist. Richard Garnett, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And with us from Charlottesville, Virginia, our friend Dahlia Lithwick, legal analyst and senior editor at Slate. Dahlia, it's wonderful to have you back. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
I want to get, let's get a first caller right in here for a response to what we have just heard from Detroit, Michigan. Will, you're on the air, Will.
Hi, Tom.
What do you think, Will?
I think that, first off, I thought that there were two great speeches by President Obama and by the new justice, hopefully. And secondly, as far as the discussion around the justice, I think that I really hope that it helps us to improve our discussion around race. I mean, no one is without an ethnicity. I don't think that any of the other justices are quote-unquote neutral. I hope that it's not a cause to try to eliminate her just because she's aware of how her ethnicity affects her decision making. I hope that it will improve our discussion around how all of us have been shaped by various facets. And lastly, she was very enthusiastic about the Constitution, so I don't think that anyone is saying that her ethnicity is the only factor that she will ever consider. So I just hope that that is not used as something that will eliminate it.
Will, we've got it, and you're watching and listening closely. Thank you for your call. Let me get one more right here. Irene in Brookline, Massachusetts. Irene, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I really enjoy your show and first time calling, so I'm a little bit nervous.
Welcome. Welcome.
I was driving to work, and I'm listening to the program. It really made me cry.
Why?
I'm Asian American, immigrated to country 17, mm-hmm. and I have a retail store. I worked all my life very hard, and education of my children has always been my number one priority. And my daughter is graduating from Harvard next week, which, you know, I'm very proud of.
So you relate to the Sotomayor family story.
Very much so. What an inspiration. And the education and what mother can do to really focus on their children's education as an immigrant, that's such an inspiration. And I don't know anything about her, but listening to her life story, and it's just such an inspiration. And anything can happen, you know, with a focus and support of parents and education of this country. It's such an inspiration. It just made me cry, so I had to call. And
we're grateful for your call. You put it well, and we hear it right in your voice, Irene. Thank you for calling, and Will as well. Let's turn to our guest, Richard Garnett. You have a lifetime in legal scholarship. You're looking at this nominee for the highest court in the land. In her fullness, we see there's the gender, there's ethnicity, and there's a lifetime in her corner of work in the law. What's your response to this nomination, Professor?
Well, her story is clearly compelling and inspiring, and I suspect that she'll be confirmed easily. For me, I think what was encouraging was the president's recognition that that it's crucial, even when one is praising a nominee's story and her background, it's crucial to remember that the most important job of a justice or a judge is to interpret the law and to apply it impartially. And of course, that's what one usually hears from the Republican side in our politics. And so I think to have the president leading off with that is encouraging. And I suspect that during the hearings, the Republicans will push hard to make sure that the nominee thinks of the judicial role in the same way.
Dahlia Lithwick, you've been thinking about potential nominees here for a long time. We've talked about some of them as the president approached this day. Now it's here, and it's Sotomayor. What do you say, madam?
Well, first of all, I think it almost goes without saying, and I can't capture it as well as Irene just did, but this is an historic day. I mean, this is it's impossible to overestimate what it means to put the third woman on the Supreme Court, but also the first Hispanic American on the Supreme Court. I just think, you know, this is going to turn into an ugly fight, Tom, about the role of identity politics, and already we're seeing a lot of complaints that, oh, Obama's just, you know, sucking up to this minority and that minority group. But I think let's put that aside and just recognize this is an historic day. And I think one of the things that's really exciting about Sotomayor as a candidate is that she's got a whole wealth of, you know, hundreds of written opinions to look at. This is somebody that we can get to know very, very well in the coming weeks and months. We're not going to be reading tea leaves. She's not 42 and hasn't been on the bench for just a couple of months. And so I think let's look at the real data. We have lots and lots and lots of opinions to look at and really grapple with those deeper constitutional issues rather than have a fight about identity politics and affirmative action and race.
We'll look at the whole picture and the likely nomination path ahead. But Dahlia, look for a moment just at the profile of the court, its likely approach to the law, the Constitution and the law, what we may see out of it with Sotomayor replacing Souter. Does that change the terrain of this court in terms of its interpretive posture toward the Constitution in a significant way or not? Souter came in from George H.W. Bush but turned out to be fairly liberal. A change here or not in the overall profile?
I think very little change. I think that some progressives really wanted a liberal Scalia in this seat, somebody who would be as far to the left as some of the court's right wing has moved to the right. I just don't think Sotomayor is that person. In fact, looking at her judicial record, she looks an awful lot like Souter. She's just pretty moderate, pretty scrupulous attention to precedent, to the case law, to the statutes she's looking at. Certainly she's a liberal. I don't think anybody is going to dispute that she's going to end up on the liberal wing of the court. But this is not someone who is in any way outside the mainstream. And let's remember, she was first tapped to the federal bench by George Bush. She has a long history as a prosecutor. So this is somebody who I don't think anybody is going to say is a sort of radical liberal activist. I mean, well, people will certainly say it, but I don't think that it's borne out at all, certainly in her legal writing.
Richard Garnett, you tend to take a conservative view of the court and law. How do you see Judge Sotomayor in those terms?
Well, these labels are tricky, and they often tell us a lot about the people who use them. I mean, certainly, soon to be Justice Sotomayor is as liberal as Justice Alito is conservative. And so for those Democrats who voted against Justice Alito, it's going to be a little awkward for them to explain to their Republican colleagues why they shouldn't vote against Judge Sotomayor. I mean, I agree with what Dahlia said, that if we define the mainstream in a sensible way, it probably includes just Judge Sotomayor, but it also easily included Justices Alito and Roberts, and yet President Obama himself voted against those two nominees.
What do you make of President Obama's decision not to go, if you agree with Dahlia's characterization, not to go for a liberal Scalia, a liberal as far to the left as Scalia and maybe to the right and as forcefully to the right?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't. I think it's too soon to know whether it's true that she's not as far to the left as Justice Scalia is to the right. Again, these labels are tricky. It is true. My reading of the blogs suggests that there are some on the left who wish that Judge Obama had taken another path, maybe gone with someone who was more kind of aggressively on the left or more of an academic profile. And obviously he hasn't done that. He's opted instead to give us this first that Dahlia described very well. But in terms of these labels, I hope that I hope we won't let them cloud the issue too much. But I also hope that over the course of this nomination, people will recall the way that then Judge Alito was treated in the sort of the hilarious and ridiculous accusations that were lobbed against him that he was somehow an extremist or outside the mainstream. Hopefully, this nomination will give us a chance to kind of pull back to sanity and treat these people as actual jurists and not as cartoon characters.
Dahlia, I'm going to go to our callers, but what about it? Do you expect the Alito treatment, however you may perceive that, for Judge Sotomayor?
I do. I couldn't agree more. I think confirmation hearings are one of the most toxic displays of really political ideology gone horribly amok, and so much of the conversation, as Rick says, you know, happens at the outer fringes, where it's just very easy for far right and far left groups to start calling people racist and sexist. In the case of Roberts and Alito, and we're already seeing now right-wing critics, and in fact it started weeks ago, even before there was a nominee, who were accusing Sotomayor of being a bully and mean-spirited and saying that she was stupid, which is an amazing thing if you're summa cum laude from Princeton. Mm.
All of those came from the New Republic, not from conservatives.
Well, no, certainly that did come from Jeff Rosen at the New Republic, but there's been already really, really ugly trashing of Sotomayor as somebody who just votes her preferences, votes her ideology, doesn't care about the law at all, and I think that's going to ramp up, and I just think that the point is very well taken, that the way we've conducted confirmation hearings has been a real race to the bottom, sort of digging through dumpsters until we can find a footnote somewhere that we can destroy someone with without looking at the entirety of their record, the entirety of their character. So I really do think we're in for another round of that. There's no question. I think Obama's got the vote, so it probably won't matter. But you have to be a very, very brave person to put yourself through a confirmation hearing.
The critics are out there already. This is from today. Wendy Long, a counsel at the Judicial Confirmation Network activist group, says Judge Sotomayor is a liberal activist of the First Order who thinks her own personal political agenda is more important than the law as written. And you say maybe more of that to come. Let's get a call from Nashville, Tennessee. Mark, you're on the air.
Hello. How are you today, Tom?
Very well. What do you see?
Well, I'm pleased with his pick generally. I had hoped he would go outside the federal bench and pick someone who had a bit more trial experience as a background. But I feel like that she has such a background growing up, what with having lived in public housing and that sort of thing, that the kind of empathy I was looking for in a Supreme Court judge will be there. So I'm very pleased about that.
Do you have a legal background, Mark?
I'm a lawyer, actually.
And we heard Senator Kyle earlier saying he doesn't want any of this stuff about someone who's, you know, looking to their empathy meter to make their decisions. Why do you make that an attribute?
I don't think a judge can divorce themselves from how they feel about particular cases and clients. And I think the empathy factor has to do with realizing that the outcome of your decision has a real impact on the lives of these people. And it's not just dealing with corporations or some sort of vague notions of due process. It's dealing with actual lives, and the outcomes of cases they decide can really turn around someone's life for the good or for ill.
So, Mark, we appreciate your comment very much. Let me try to get to a couple more. Thanks so much for calling in Nashville. Another from Detroit. Greg, you're on the air. Hello, Greg.
Tom, how are you doing?
Very well.
How
what
are you
doing,
see? Tom? I think it's a great choice. I want more color on the Supreme Court, more Hispanics. I like Asians. I want a diverse country. and we need it. It's about time. For 23 hours and 45 minutes, our nation has been dominated by white males. So this last 15 minutes before the new day, I'm looking forward to more diversity.
And what do you think? Let me ask you, besides changing the photograph, what might that bring to the bench and to this country, Greg? More color.
It might bring more equality, more logical reasoning, more truth, more justice, and all of the above.
Thanks for your call from Detroit. Let's get one from Elizabeta in Brookline, Massachusetts. Elizabeta, you're on the air.
Yes,
Hi.
I just wanted to say that it's wonderful that there is a human being that is not afraid in a public speak to say the word, I love you. She was able to express her feelings, but she is a woman with brains. I feel this is wonderful. It's a new thing, and it's amazing. So.
Thank you very much, Elizabeta. And Robert in Lowell, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
This is Robert.
Hello? Hi. Hi, you're on.
Wonderful. I just wanted to say that this is a very pragmatic choice for the Supreme Court. I think she's going to be confirmed. I think there would be people who would find something to say about her, but that's just going to be making stuff up. She's such an excellent choice for now for this country. It's amazing. It makes me feel very proud. It makes me feel very happy. I think she's going to bring great intellect to the bench. I think she's going to bring, again, that same word, empathy. But I don't think that she's going to sort of go off base. Her reasoning is going to be clear. Her reasoning is going to be lucid.
Robert, we've got it, and our clock ticks down. You're pretty crisp and clear yourself right there. Richard Garnett, the president quoted Oliver Wendell Holmes, Supreme Court Justice, saying the life of the law has not been logic, it has been experience. As a conservative interpreter, do you agree?
Well, I think descriptively it's often true, right, that that judges and justices have had their ruling shaped by their experiences. I prefer what the president said earlier in his speech, though, which is that as important as empathy is in many, many contexts, it is the job of a judge simply to try to get the right answer on the law. I know that's easier said than done, but that should be the goal. And I think Judge Sotomayor, frankly, would agree that it's not her job just to sort of consult. I think you called it the empathy meter. You know, one aspect of this nomination that hasn't been spoken about yet, which I think is just kind of curious, is that I'm not sure what Judge Sotomayor's religious background is, but she did attend Catholic schools, and so we are looking at the prospect of a sixth Catholic on the court, and a court that has one white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, which would have, if anything, would have surprised the founders more than perhaps the court's jurisprudence,
yeah,
the fact that there's only one white Anglo-Saxon Protestant on the
court. Wow, the kaleidoscope keeps turning, keeps moving. Delia Lithwick, any question of the nomination? If there's not a, you know, some kind of, I don't know, something that drops in from outer space that we don't know yet, there's a big Democratic presence in the Senate. Is there any question ultimately, do you think?
Oh, I don't think so. I think she'll be confirmed fairly easily, and I think the real challenge for all of us going forward in the next couple of weeks is to keep it clean, to not turn this into sort of yet more constitutional dumpster diving, but to really think hard about the issues.
Keep it clean. Of course, there'll be more before the end, and we'll follow it, but it's been a fascinating launch today of the nomination of Judge Sonia Sotomayor to the United States Supreme Court. Dahlia Lithwick, always great to have you, legal analyst and senior editor at Slate. Thank you very, very much for being with us on this day, Dahlia.
Thank you.
And Richard Garnett at Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana. Professor Garnett, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Listeners, thanks for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.